This is MMA Torch editor Jamie Pennick, and this is the Torch audio update for Sunday, November 16th, 2008. I'm joined once again today by Torch columnist Jason Bent, Torch columnist Matt Pelkey, and senior Torch columnist Sean Ennis for a look at last night's UFC 91 Couture versus Lesnar card. Guys, plain and simple, this was a special card to watch. Lived up to all of the hype and all of the time that was spent discussing it and going over it last night. We got to see every fight on the card, and everyone on the undercard, you know, they just put forth their best efforts, expecting a high buy rate for pay-per-view. Everyone really stepped up their games and provided some really, really special fights and moments in this, including the passing of the torch in the main event. But before we get to that, guys, I want to get what your fight of the night was and why you thought that was the best fight on this night filled with good fights. Matt, we'll start with you.
For me, it was Dos Anjos against Jeremy Stephens. You had one fight with Aaron Riley and George Gurzel. That was your classic, you know, let's just stand in front of each other and punch as hard as we can until somebody goes down, you know, the Chris Liddell, Paul Taylor type of strategy. He also had Mark Bocek against Alvin Robinson, you know, just putting on a ground clinic for three rounds. But neither of them kind of had, you know, diversity in their attacks. But the Dos Anjos-Stevens fight did. It was, you know, compromising positions for Stevens. Almost had his arm torn off in that first round. Came back a little in the second round, and then, you know, just the uppercut from hell to finish it off in the third round. You know, it had a great comeback. It had great fight. It had great action on the ground. Good stuff on the feet, and then an emphatic finish. So, it's not much more you can ask for out of a fight.
Jason, your fight of the night.
Well, forgetting the significance of the main event, I've got to go with George Gurzel versus Aaron Riley. And even, you know, I have to kind of agree with Matt a little bit as far as Jeremy and Raphael having much more diversity, whereas Gurzel and Riley were, you know, just rock'em sock'em robots. It was a better fight than I expected, and I'm a little bit biased towards Gurzel. I really, really enjoy watching this kid fight, and this fight was just everything possible. Riley's kicks were just completely vicious, and Gurzel hung in there. Now, he made a huge mistake by continuing to just slug it out, because he really could have made this a much easier fight. But it was very compelling to watch, especially coming on the heels of the main event, getting to see it. It was fantastic. And any casual viewers that were in attendance and enjoyed everything up to this point and the huge main event, after that, they were like, oh, there's one more fight? We get to see another fight? And it was just a slam-down, knockdown event. And it was a blast to watch with Riley pulling it out on the cards. That's my fight of the night, Riley versus Gurzel.
Sean, your fight of the night.
Yeah, I'm going with Matt on this one. I've got Stevens and Dos Anjos. I thought that was, as you said, a much more versatile fight. I did enjoy the Gurzel-Riley fight, but the thing with that fight that bothered me was Gurzel, you know, yeah, that's fine that he likes to stand up and bang and everything, but he could be so much more diverse in his game. Like, a lot of times, but my enjoyment of fights also has, you know, factors in game plan, and Gurzel's game plan was just silly. You know, it's almost like he goes in there with no game plan and just starts banging away, because he does it every single fight. And then the fact that Mark Del Grande never even told him to take the fight to the ground or try to take the fight to the ground is just a little bit surprising to me, unless Aaron Riley has some just crazy grappling skills that I don't know about. But that's what I wanted to see. I wanted to see if Gurzel could get it down. Could he keep it down? Could he do something down there? Could Riley escape? Could he get back to his feet? Whatever. But instead we got some, you know, okay, kickboxing out of it. Now, Riley did have some nice kicks and everything, and that's why he won the fight. But I would have been more intrigued had the fight, you know, had a few more elements to it. But Stevens and Dos Anjos delivered on every level, including just a devastating finish by Stevens after basically splitting the first two rounds. So that's why I've got Stevens Dos Anjos.
For what it's worth, the UFC did give fight of the night honors and bonuses to Aaron Riley and George Gurzel. But Sean, I'm with you on your reasons for taking Dos Anjos and Stevens over that, because that was also my fight of the night.
because it just boggles my mind with the ground game that Gurgel does possess, that he never implements it in his fights. He's so wanting to be a brawler and a striker, and I mean, he was connected on the nasty kicks to the body throughout this entire fight, and was connecting on a bunch of combinations of his own, but he was getting tagged left and right, and he was taking so much punishment, and he didn't do anything else to change that, and Riley was simply a better striker. I mean, Gurgel's a good striker, but he's not an elite striker. I mean, I'd say he's more in the average range, but he can take a punch, and he's willing to stay in there and brawl it out, and you know, it was just too much for three rounds to pull it off when he's taking more punishment than he's dishing out, plain and simple. But we'll go back to the beginning of our night, and we get Nate Quarry taking on Demian Maia in the middleweight division. And guys, I don't think I'm alone in saying that it was shocking how quickly Maia was able to take this to the ground, and with as much ease as he was able to take this to the ground. And then it was just a matter of time, especially once he got that body triangle locked in. Quarry could have done pretty much whatever he wanted to try to do to get out of that, and it wasn't happening. And Maia was content to just keep himself busy, to not have anything stood up, and get his arm under there for the rear naked choke. It was just another beautiful ground display from Demian Maia. Sean, what were your thoughts on this opening fight?
Yeah, I'm with you on that. You know, I was very surprised at how easily Maia took it to the ground. You know, it was actually a really good takedown. Was, you know, he shot in, and then when Quarry sprawled, he kind of pulled guard a little bit. You know, didn't get the full guard in there right away, but was able to pull guard and kind of drag him down. And, you know, we all knew once it was down there that it was just a matter of time, especially, you know, doing it that fast. You know, he had the mount before the first minute was over, and you know, just showed his stuff. Now, I want to see what he can do against, and no disrespect to Quarry, against more of a top-level fighter. I'm interested to see what he can do against someone that has proven takedown defense, and, you know, and very good striking to go along with decent grappling defense. Because, you know nobody's going to out-grapple Demian Maia in the middleweight division, which is fine, but it's a matter of keeping it out of the position that he wants to get it in. You know, I'd like to see him take on maybe a Martin Campman type, or a Talis Latis, or something similar to that. You know, what Maia can do in those kind of situations. But yes, very impressive display by Maia.
Jason, your thoughts on our opening bout?
Well, it ended in the same exact fashion that I had predicted, but so much earlier. I expected a lot more out of Nate Quarry, and I think perhaps at this point I'm giving him too much respect. He's not even at the level of being a gatekeeper at this point. Demian Maia did everything he wanted and more, and came in with a game plan and executed it with laser-like precision, and it was contingent on any singular mistake made by Quarry as far as finishing this one off quickly. Once he sunk that body triangle in, this one was over, and it was just a matter of when. When is this going to finish off? And he did so with a beautiful rear naked choke, and right away I figured, looking good, he's going to have his fourth submission of the night victory, because Maya's just so impressive on the ground. After the fight, called out Bisping. I'd like to see a Maia-Bisping fight, not so much as a test of Maia, but as an official test of Michael Bisping, to see if he could keep a guy like Demian Maia at bay. I mean, obviously he did so against Lieben, but Lieben's a pure striker. Could Bisping do enough against Maia? At this point, I really don't think so. I think that's a fight that they should stay away as far as keeping Bisping somewhat protected. Talis Latis would be an awesome fight to watch against Demian Maia. But this one was exactly by the books for Maia, and at this point, Quarry is just a tough alum who we all love based on, you know, the comeback story from the back surgery, but he's not a top-flight fighter anymore, not even at the level of a gatekeeper, and this one was just academic from the start. Maia did what everyone had predicted he would do.
Matt, what were you thinking while you were watching this fight?
I was thinking that I totally whiffed on my prediction on this fight. I think I was blinded by the fact that I like Nate Marquardt and want to, or not, excuse me, not Nate, Nate Corey, and I wanted to see him do well, but he just is not at the level of Damian Maia. We talk about, you know, showcase fights all the time around here. Gabriel Gonzaga certainly had one last night. But this wasn't supposed to be a showcase fight. It was supposed to be two, you know, relatively even matched fighters, you know, skill wise in different departments, fighting to see who moves up towards the top of the 185 pound ladder. And Maia just overwhelmed him from the start. Don't think he left with even a scratch on him, and, you know, dominated on the ground. He's going to be tough to contend with. Bisping is wrapped up. You know, he's going to fight the winner of Dan Henderson, Rich Franklin at some point, you know, after The Ultimate Fighter. But I would like to see Damian Maia against Nate Marquardt, somebody who really likes to just throw people around and impose his will on Top Game and, you know, put Maia on his back, and let's see what he really has on his back, not when he's the one in control. So great fight for Maia, and I think he's ready for the top of the division.
You mentioned Gonzaga, and that brings us to the showcase bout that he did have last night. He decided he wasn't going to go out there and pull a Verdum, and he did what he needed to do, decimating Josh Hendricks in 1 minute of the first round. Just want to toot my own horn a little bit on the audio, because I called this one exactly on Wednesday in my preview. The exact quote, "It shouldn't last long, and Gonzaga should come away with a dominant-looking TKO in the first round." That's the only prediction I nailed probably in the 6 months that I've been the editor of this website, so I'm going to stick my guns to that one. But Gonzaga did exactly what he needed to do. Hendricks not anywhere in his league. You know, just stepped back out of a clinch and dropped him with a right hand, added a couple more punches for good measure, and that was that. Jason, your thoughts on Gonzaga using his showcase victory the way it's supposed to be done?
First, a fighter like Josh Hendricks, to start the night, he didn't have a tape of highlights signifying his rival in the octagon, and now he does not have a highlight tape of his time in the octagon. I mean, 1 minute and 1 second, and he was just soundly trounced by Gonzaga. Gabriel Gonzaga did everything we expected him to do, and Jamie Penick led pipe lock of the week here, but the punches were so hard that it did everything that I didn't expect. I expected the submission. I imagined Gonzaga would triangle choke him out, but, you know, his punches were too hard, and he was controlling the fight with such ease that why bother? When you're hitting that hard, there's no point in bothering to do anything else, especially when you have such a big tomato can in front of you. I mean, Hendricks has the tattoos of the hands on his chest, but basically he had targets all over his body for fists for Gonzaga, and that TKO was just vicious, vicious KO. You know, a couple more shots, looked at the ref, you know, "Hey, do you want me to hit him again? Okay, I'll hit him one more time." But this is exactly what he should have done, and he did do it. This is what Fabricio Werdum was supposed to do. This is what you're supposed to do, and he did it. Gabriel Gonzaga is still one of the top heavyweights, in my opinion, and in doing this, he's allowed to tread water for a while and retain his spot on the outside looking in at the heavyweight tournament.
Matt, you touched on it lightly already with the last fight analysis, but what were your thoughts on Gonzaga here?
I don't think it's a stretch to say that Gabriel Gonzaga has me to thank for his performance last night. if everybody remembers correctly, I predicted he was going to have a Kevin Jordan-esque lackluster performance and, you know, snooze through to the third round. And clearly Gabriel Gonzaga listened to our audio and wanted to prove me wrong, because that's exactly what he did. And he came out and destroyed Hendricks just like he was supposed to do. He's still one of the top heavyweights in a thin heavyweight division. I say let's match him up with Shane Carwin, see what gives first, and maybe the winner of that fight can be the first to take on the champ coming out of the mini tournament.
Sean, you're taking Gonzaga, and how far does he have to go? How many more fights does he have to win in this really thin division to be considered for a title shot?
I would say, you know, Gonzaga is a beast. I was saying on the preview show that I've always been a big fan of his. I think he wins. At least one more, obviously, just to keep busy. But I don't know who else you know, would step up for a title shot after the Nogueira-Lesnar fight. And I always say Nogueira-Lesnar, I'm being a bit presumptuous, but there's no way Frank Mir beats Nogueira. I say it every chance I get, I'm going to still say it. Anyway, Gonzaga, yeah, he gets one more fight. I think it'll probably be against, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if it's against someone like, you know, your Anthony Hardonk or someone like that. Hopefully it is against the Shane Carwin type. You know, I would like to see what he can do against, or maybe like a Czech Congo. That would be a fight. You know, I think one fight against like an upper-tier guy, and then he's back in the title hunt. But probably two fights before he gets a title shot, I would think. But Gabe Gonzaga, I mean, that's a guy, he's 29 years old, and, you know, he has, maybe his one hole is conditioning, but I mean, skill-wise, he hits like a Mack truck, and he's got a black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, so, you know, I don't know where someone would exploit his game if he gets his cardio under control. Maybe wrestling, which would give him a problem against Lesnar, but that's kind of an unknown, so... Yeah, one to two fights for Gonzaga before he's back and you know, looking for a title shot.
And you know, you just mentioned the Lesnar factor there. I think Gonzaga down the line against Lesnar, once Lesnar learns a little bit more of the game and gets some of that ground stuff down outside of his wrestling to defend against the submissions and stuff. Which I'm with you. There's no way Frank Mir wins, and Lesnar's going to have to work on. Once he gets Nogueira to the ground, which he will, he'll have to work on not getting submitted from the bottom, not getting submitted from the side, the top, the left, the right, the up, the down, because that's how Nogueira wins a lot of his fights. And against Lesnar, that's going to be something that we all know he's going to be looking to do, because he's not going to want to sit and try to trade with a Lesnar. And he's gonna have to do something, because Lesnar is only gonna be better than he was last night once that fight comes around. But after that Gonzaga fight, we get the first of our prelims, of which we saw every fight on this card last night, and Ryan Thomas and Matt Brown got just past the first round, 57 seconds into round two. Really, round two is just an extension of round one. So it's pretty much like a six-minute round with Thomas working some nice strikes and getting takedowns, and Brown diligently working on submission attempts from the ground, which he finally got the armbar locked in. And, you know, he sustained the slam that Thomas gave to him and held onto the arm to force the tap out. So good showing for Matt Brown taking this fight on just a couple of weeks' notice. And like you said, he dropped 25 pounds to get to this fight in a couple of weeks. So good for him to take the fight and take the opportunity and pick up a big victory. Matt, where were you at with this fight?
You know, ever since his time in The Ultimate Fighter, I've not been a big Matt Brown fan. You know, before he ever fought, everybody was talking about, oh, this guy's just such an animal. He's a beast. I can't wait to see him get in there. And then he had that sloppy slugfest with Jeremy May, and I just didn't see it. And he looked good against Kim in his last fight, losing that decision. And then he looked fantastic last night. You know, certainly he's not, you know, top of the food chain in the welterweight division, but he puts on exciting fights, and he's getting better. So very nice performance by him. He earned another fight. He's, you know, got roughly a 500 record, so he needs to start stringing together some wins if he wants to actually be a player in the division. But last night was a good first step.
Sean, what did you think of our first prelim fight here?
It was a nice fight. The only reason I didn't rate it higher than I did, and I gave it 2+ stars, was because there's a lack of ramifications in that fight. You know, basically you've got Thomas, who's going to be out of the UFC now for sure. And then Brown, who's going to have to string together a heck of a lot of victories before he's any kind of contender in the UFC. But, you know, the cool thing about the fight was that he continues to raise his stock a little bit. You know, if Matt Brown puts together a nice string of victories, it's a good story. You know, it's a guy that comes into the UFC, into the Ultimate Fighter, as a 500 fighter, you know, doesn't look real good. He takes a highly touted Korean fighter and takes him the distance and almost wins it, and then, you know, gets a nice victory over this guy. So, you know, it was a nice fight, good fight. But it remains to be seen what'll happen with Matt Brown. I wonder if they'll just kind of throw him to the wolves to either, you know, get him out of the UFC or to see what he's got and say, hey, sink or swim here, or what they're going to do with him next. But, you know, a guy always raises the stock in the UFC if he takes a fight on short notice, and that's what Brown did here. So, that's my
Jason, where were you at on this on Matt Brown's performance here last night?
I've never been a fan of Matt Brown. I don't think he's talented really in any aspect, but he's the coach's favorite kind of fighter because he's the kid in the gym that finishes the workout, pukes, and runs 5 more miles outside. I mean, he's just a workhorse. He's a lunchbox kind of guy. Never been super impressed with him, but he's becoming a better fighter. He's greatly improved, cutting 25 pounds, taking this fight on 2 weeks. This is the kind of guy who's fighting and scratching and clawing to get his chance in the UFC, and I think he definitely deserves another fight or two, but I do look to them to throw him to the wolves. I do see that one happening, not so much as to extinguish Brown, but to see what he can really do, because, you know, push the kid. Let's see what he can do with a full camp and, you know, shot on the main card, perhaps on a lesser card in the future, but not a big fan of his. It's not going to break my heart if he goes away, but again, he's just a tireless worker. He's greatly improved, and, you know, the extension of the first round, you're dead on accurate with that one, 57 seconds. This was a great fight for him. Thomas is gone. Brown's got another one or two fights, and we'll see what he's capable of.
And that gets us back to the main card with the continuation of what was kind of a theme for the main card last night of, you know, fights that we were all predicting to be battles and really drag into the third round, or in the main event's case, even longer than that, possibly. And Dustin Hazlett takes care of Tamden McCrory with one of the nastiest arm bars, almost shoulder breaker type deals that I've ever seen, and just dominates McCrory and picks up a win 4 minutes into the first round. Jason, where were you at on this fight?
This was a fight that I expected to go a lot longer out of just complete respect for McCrory. Dustin Hazlett is so good, he made this one look easy, and that's hard to do against a kid like McCrory. Hazlett just earned the black belt, and right here is an audition tape for why he has the black belt. The goal to get most submissions of the night, he's getting ready to head up there now. He got submission of the night for this one. Demi Maia definitely has competition. One thing that impressed me was just a little tiny thing was how quickly he let off of the submission. And that was a great show of sportsmanship and respect because he let off just about the same time that the referee said, okay, enough. You know, a lot of guys hang on just for that other fraction of a second. This was great respect. Two young kids were going to be around for a long time. Dustin Hazlett is amazing. Big fan of his.
Sean, your thoughts on Dustin Hazlett's performance here?
Yeah, Dustin Hazlett's the man. Basically, he came in here looking like a moonshiner that came out of the hills of Kentucky. And then, you know, put a hurting on Tamden McCrory. And I'll tell you what, if this fight went the full three rounds at the pace that it went and with the, you know, the skill set shown by both of these guys, that's almost a 5-star fight. I mean, that was a half a round of just a fantastic fight. And the finish, you know, like Jason said, the armbar was just spectacular. You know, and he landed a nice head kick before, you know, timed it really well with McCrory ducking. And, you know, just the transition from omoplata into that reverse armbar was just crazy. And when you're getting submission on the submission of the night on the same card as Damian Maia, you're doing pretty well for yourself. You know, I'm excited to see Hazlett fight every time he comes out. And yeah, it's like Jason said, both these guys are going to be around for a heck of a long time. And Hazlett, it may be sooner rather than later before we see him back in the upper echelon of fighters.
Well, Hazlett's a definite star in the making. I mean, he's only got a couple of losses on his record, and he's 22. And it's another one of those cases of someone getting better every time they go out and impressing even more. And he's already got a bunch of fights under his belt as it is. So it's scary to think, with as good as he is right now, that he's still just 22 and he's still just getting better in this game. Matt, what were your thoughts on Hazlett's submission here?
Beautiful, beautiful submission. I don't know about anybody else, but I felt sometimes last night that I was sitting around watching a two-hour-long infomercial for the Rubber Guard. In like three or four different fights, I almost finished an omoplata, which never happened. And yet, Jeremy Stevens almost got his arm ripped off, and so did Tamron McCrory last night. Great show of respect to kind of, you know, crank it, you know, give him time to go, okay, that's the point where I need to stop, you know, letting him do this to me. McCrory, I thought, looked good. Very nice leg kicks, very fluid on the feet. Both guys are definitely improving, and, you know, these guys are both in their early 20s. These are two of the next wave of the welterweight division, and Hazel leading that charge. Just wait for, you know, two, three years down the road when he's 25 and George St. Pierre is about 30. What a matchup that's going to be when he's ready to take on George St. Pierre, I think. By that point, he might be ready to take over the mantle of the division from him.
And we get to another prelim fight with, you already mentioned, Jeremy Stevens being stuck in that omoplata, and his shoulder was in a really bad spot in the first round against Rafael Dos Anjos. And, you know, to be honest, a case can be made for this being a split fight going into the third round, but I honestly thought Dos Anjos did enough through the majority of the second round to slightly edge it in my eyes, but I don't fault anyone for giving it to Stevens for what he was able to do in the second half of the second round. But this was just a great fight, finished with one of the best knockouts anyone's seen in MMA. That was just a beautiful, beautiful uppercut that connected flush on the chin, and the slow motion looked like the preview slowdown videos they did for Fight Night 3 when it came out on the Xbox 360. Just the rippling of the face on the slow-mo as he got just absolutely rocked by that uppercut. Sean, Matt, you guys gave your thoughts on this fight at the beginning because this was your fight of the night, as was mine. Jason, where were you at on this one along with us?
Super impressed by Jeremy Stevens. You know, I had him surviving the first round just by sheer will, and anytime Dana White ever wants to ask anybody if you want to be a fighter, show them that footage, because lesser men would have tapped and even greater competitors would have tapped. I can't imagine the pain he was feeling as his shoulder was just getting ripped to shreds. I did have Stevens winning the second round and the third round being, you know, it's up for grabs, but that uppercut was something out of a video game. I mean, what Blitz the League is to the NFL in video games, you know, this was like EA Sports Face Breakers or what have you. I mean, head just spinning around like it was on a swivel. This is ultimate knockouts. Whatever volume they're up to, this is going to be on that disc. Just iced him. His eyes were looking up to the heavens, and I think it, one ear was in the fifth row, and the other one was up in the mezzanine section. Great KO win for Little Heathen, and this is the kind of highlight you're going to see over and over, and this is a perfect fight to be showcased eventually on you know, a program such as Unleashed. This was an excellent fight, and the kind of finish where everybody in the room just goes, oh, did you see that? And you show the replay again. You know, Stevens looked great. Dos Anjos, you know, gave it his all. Probably could have won the second round as well, but Stevens gutted this one out. Awesome KO.
Matt, anything more to add on your thoughts from earlier on this fight?
Yeah, just I just loved the slow-mo. That was reminiscent of both Rashad Evans' KOs of Sean Salmon and Chuck Liddell, like one for the record books. You'll be seeing that. That'll be spliced into the beginning of some UFC program that you'll see every time. Just great, great, great knockout.
Sean, any more thoughts on this fight?
Yeah, just to you know, keep your eye on Jeremy Stevens. You know, he's got a couple of losses in the UFC, one to Dean Thomas and one to Spencer Fisher, but this is another fighter that has never looked bad in any of his fights. And now that I've seen his submission defense and his ability to survive submissions, I'm very impressed by what I've seen with Stevens. He showed the same kind of thing in the Dean Thomas fight. Had, you know, gave Thomas a really good fight in his UFC debut, and here just a classic performance. So Stevens is going to be a guy. I mean, this was kind of a star-making performance for him. You know, who, if they remember this fight, remember his name, is not going to be excited to see him fight again. I mean, I'd like to see him on the main card next time.
Definitely. That brings us to our semi-main event of the evening for the number one contender for BJ Penn's lightweight belt, Kenny Florian taking on Joe Stevenson. And, you know, Stevenson in his pre-fight interview was highly offended that he was considered the underdog coming into this fight. Yeah, the Vegas oddsmakers were proven right. Kenny Florian looked as good as he has looked in the UFC, in MMA, and he just absolutely dominated Joe Stevenson in this fight. Stevenson was trying to rush the action, and Kenny was able to get away and avoid it. Had some nice striking before he got it to the ground and showed a ground game that, you know, a lot of people forget that he's got as good of a ground as he does. And he showed it off in this and absolutely just destroyed Joe Stevenson 4 minutes into the first round here. Huge win for Kenny Florian. And I loved the enthusiasm calling out BJ after the fight and, you know, just yelling that he wants the belt. He should have been fighting for that belt at this card. He shouldn't have to wait until next year. And, you know, Kenny Florian, if he continues to improve on his performance last night, you cannot count him out of that BJ Penn fight. Sean, where were you at on Kenny Florian here?
It's absolutely true. I don't think you can count him out against anybody at this point. Even against Sean Sherk, who pretty much dominated him the first time they fought. I think Kenny Florian is one of those guys that, you know, may not be naturally gifted like your Brock Lesnar type, but is a hard enough worker that he improves every time he goes out there, and he looks better every time he goes out there. And, you know, Joe Stevenson is a tough, tough guy. You don't finish Joe Stevenson in the first round. You know, BJ Penn finished him in the second. You know, I don't know. Last time Joe Stevenson was finished before BJ Penn was like back in 2000. You know, so that's no small accomplishment just to choke him out in the first round. So Kenny Florian, you know, just showing incredible skills, and I think you know, Florian versus Penn would be a heck of a fight. Yeah, I'd rather see Penn take on Eddie Alvarez or Joachim Hansen or Shinya Aoki or something like that. But Kenny Florian is certainly no slouch, and if BJ Penn takes him lightly, he'd be in a world of trouble.
Matt, where were you at on Florian's performance here?
I think if the UFC gave out a bonus for performance of the night, it would have to have gone to Kenny Florian. This is supposed to be evenly matched. It's supposed to go late in the rounds and probably to a decision. I think we all, you know, kind of thought it might go like the Huerta fight with Kenny Florian having to, you know, pick his moments and hit his shots and just kind of stay away to avoid, you know, ending up on his back with Joe Stevenson on top of him. And none of that mattered. He destroyed him. And he did it in half the time that BJ Penn did it, and that was with, you know, blood pouring out of Joe Stevenson. I think BJ Penn needs to be wary, win or lose against George St. Pierre of a letdown, because if he comes in with anything less than his A game, Kenny Florian, I think, is going to take his title. He's one of the hardest working guys in the entire sport, and I think his game planning is second to only maybe Randy Couture. He just has the whole package right now, and he just keeps getting better and better and better every time out.
Jason, where were you at on Florian here?
At now, I think fighters need to quit announcing they've not had to drink in a few months, because, I mean, just like Chris Leben, here Stevenson is living the cleaner life, and he gets canned. I'm not saying he should go train with Tank Abbott, but, you know, maybe just have one drink, just one drink. His body looked so defined, and he was so lean in the face with his musculature that I hate to cast a shadow on him. You know, I want to check Stevenson's urine. Just something did not look right about his body as far as his leanness and his muscularity. But Kenny Florian made him look like a slouch, and Joe Stevenson's not a slouch. Stevenson is not at the very top of the class, but he's right outside the door, and he will kick the ass of anybody that tries to get in the club. Florian versus BJ Penn is the fight that everybody should want to see. The belt's going to be held up for a while. The belt is going to be held up for a while, but when this fight happens, it will be a super fight. The one thing that really impressed me was the move of grabbing the cage by Florian and accepting the warning to avoid the big slam. I thought that was very smart. You know you're going to be allowed at least a warning. Grab onto it at least once if it's going to benefit you. Joe was so much stronger, but you would not be able to tell. I mean, Kenny Florian looks like he should be showing me the new BlackBerry Bolt in the cell phone store, and here he just completely annihilates a beast of a fighter in Joe Stevenson. Kenny Florian has gotten better and better. This is clearly his best performance ever in the octagon, and I can only imagine how much more he can elevate his game when driven for a fight with the likes of BJ Penn. And the only thing is, BJ Penn is going to have to be that much driven to match him in order to not get caught.
And before we get to the main event, we'll go to the two prelim fights that aired following that. First off, George Gurgel versus Aaron Riley. The only fight on the card that went to the scorecards and was given fight of the night honors and bonuses for the two guys. We talked about this somewhat at the beginning, as Jason, this was your fight of the night. But basically, this is just a three-round slugfest, brawl fest. Tons of body kicks from Gurgel, tons of high kicks from Riley, a lot more combinations connecting from Riley, but they were just going back and forth for three rounds. Highly exciting. There really wasn't much else to this fight than back and forth tagging each other with shots and coming in with combinations and each guy taking their turn, getting kicks in, and basically Riley just did enough to win. And Gurgel, you know, didn't do enough to do that same thing. So, Sean, any other thoughts on the Gurgel-Riley fight here?
Not really. You know, it was what it was. It was a nice slugfest, and Aaron Riley picked up his first victory in the UFC, which is, you know, great for him. And he'll be back again, which is nice. So it's just hard to get an, you know, it's hard to gauge a George Gurgel fight as far as what now, you know, because Gurgel isn't going anywhere. He's Rich Franklin's buddy, and you know, he's in the UFC for as long as he wants to be. So, and you know, he doesn't change his style. He doesn't seem to learn from his fights. So, no, I don't know. And you know, I'm looking forward to seeing Aaron Riley again, but we didn't really learn anything about him because he only had to keep a ground fighter on his feet. You know, so we'll see what happens next.
Matt, any other thoughts on this fight?
Yeah, I love, you know, a slugfest as much as the next guy. And I think if it was anybody other than George Gurgel on the other side of the cage, I would have enjoyed it a lot more. But I think the problem that I have and that Sean has is when we watch George Gurgel fights, we know what he can do. He gives people their black belts in jiu-jitsu. He's a black belt jiu-jitsu coach. We want to see all the facets of his game, and it almost affects our enjoyment level to watch him kind of waste his talent level. And maybe, you know, he's also just picked up a $60,000 bonus for Fight of the Night, so maybe that's his strategy. He thinks, well, instead of trying to, you know, grind out decisions and submission victories on the ground, I'll just stand and slug and pick up as much extra money as I can instead of trying to contend for a title. So maybe that's his strategy. Maybe he's just not a smart fighter. And I think Mark Delgrade probably just realizes there's no hope of trying to coach him with a smart game plan. He just says, okay, this is what George is going to do, and I'll try and tweak that as much as I can to help him with his slugfest. But it was a very good fight, very enjoyable to watch. Just it's just frustrating to not be able to see everything that George Gurgel has to offer.
Jason, anything more to add on your fight of the night?
With George, I think he's got a Napoleon complex in that he's out to prove how tough he is every time, and I think he feels that he should win it based on his fists rather than his black belt skills, which is foolish, but I think he's the type of guy that can be goaded into a slugfest at all times. He's constantly trying to fight bigger than he is, and a game plan that he should not be, you know, enacting in the ring, but this is how he's going to probably make his bread. He's in the UFC for as long as he wants. Fight of the Night is not going to do anything to change his strategy. I'm sure they feel that it was their fight to win, but he could have made this so much easier, and he really could be a top-shelf fighter, but he's insistent on trying to slug it out and pretend he's 6'8".
And our final prelim fight here was just an absolute ground battle of wills and positioning between Alvin Robinson and Mark Bocek. Bocek really dominated this fight. He was never in trouble at all. But Robinson did an amazing job in defending pretty much everything Bocek was trying to do until the end of the third round, the 316 of the third round. He got caught in the rear naked choke. But up until that point, he was doing a great job in not allowing Bocek to do anything with the position that he had. But Bocek was fine dishing out a little punishment here and there, was getting the takedowns and the slams and just really dominating Robinson on the ground, and it was a good showing from Bocek here. Matt, what were your thoughts on this final prelim fight?
This is kind of the fight you want to show to your friends that think that it's boring once the fight goes to the ground. This is a very technical chess match kind of a battle, but it was still, there was not a boring moment in the fight. Alvin Robinson for three rounds had to fend off submission attempts for Bocek, and Bocek is top of the food chain on the ground in the lightweight division. His stand-up obviously isn't that strong. His wrestling's okay, not bad. I would like to see him maybe with a slight step up in competition to see what he's improved on. But clearly his game plan from the beginning here was, I'm just going to take him down and grind and grind and grind until I finally catch something, and he did. And just a very nice performance. And I'd like to see Alvin Robinson brought back too. Put up a pretty good fight, on his back pretty much the whole fight, and took him three rounds to be submitted by one of the best on the ground. So good stuff by both guys.
Jason, your thoughts on our final fight from last night?
This was an excellent fight to watch. It was obviously one-sided, but it was a fun one-sided fight to watch, and it was an excellent game of chess on the ground. Mark Bocek did everything but finish it off during the first two rounds, and Alvin Robinson just defied convention by hanging in there constantly. I mean, it was a war of attrition, and eventually he was going to get caught. And finally at 316 of round three, the rear naked choke was slipped in for the submission, but Alvin Robinson just performed excellently in holding Bocek off for as long as he did. Mark shows me a lot. I actually, predicted Robinson to win this one, but I want to see both fighters brought back. This was one of those fun, one-sided fights to watch. And, it was the kind of fight when it goes to the ground, you can show all those guys who only love the stand-up battles that, this is kind of cool to watch, too. Check this out. Because even the defense from Robinson was just amazing to watch, and it left you wondering, maybe he could pull this one off. He could get lucky, but Bocek was too much throughout, and it was an excellent fight. Glad to see it made the main card as far as airing.
Sean, where were you at with this one?
It was an enjoyable fight. I really did enjoy it. I thought Bocek acquitted himself well, finally, after, we heard so much about this big Canadian guy coming out of Canada saying, oh, this is the Canadian equivalent of, whoever with the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt. And he finally kind of got to show off his ground skills in submitting Alvin Robinson. And it was nice to have that back and forth with an actual finish at the end. Bocek kept working and working and working. And as the guy said, Robinson was defending very, very well right up until the end when he finally got caught. And it was a good fight, very enjoyable from start to finish. I can't remember, I think it was Matt that said, this is the kind of fight that you want to show to people that say the ground fight is boring, because it was certainly exciting from start to finish, and it was almost, exclusively on the ground. So, good stuff.
And that brings us, guys, to the main event, the one fight that we covered extensively, the one fight that absolutely everyone and their mother had been looking forward to. Brock Lesnar challenging Randy Couture for the heavyweight championship. And we got some questions answered on Brock Lesnar in this fight. And Randy learned very quickly that even if you get Brock to the ground, he's not going to stay there, and you're not going to be able to keep him there. He got him as far as on his ass trying to drag him down, and then Brock got up and had a great sweep when Randy got his back. He held on to that left leg of Randy, pulled it forward, stepped back behind Randy's other leg, and had a nice leg sweep to get dominant control in that first round. You know, Brock's patience in the first round was really impressive. And then they came out, slugged it in the second round. Couture caught Lesnar with a couple of shots in this fight that were hard flush shots to the face of Lesnar, including cutting up, giving him a cut above his eye. And then, you know, as Randy's trying to avoid some of Brock's shots, Brock catches him right to the side of the head, right behind the ear, drops him down. If Randy would have been 2 inches up and to his left, he would have been knocked out cold, but he had some sense left in him, and Brock comes in with the jackhammer hammer fist, because that's about the speed at which he was tossing those things down. And you know what? You got to give the ref a ton of credit in this fight for giving Couture all the time that he could have possibly needed to try to do something to get out of the predicament he was in a championship fight, big fight atmosphere like this. Even if they took some damage here, it was clear Couture was attempting to move around a little bit, and you got to give him a chance as the champion to not lose it on a fluke quick stoppage. But he gave him every chance in the world to get up here, and Brock Lesnar is your new UFC heavyweight champion. Anyone that has any more questions on whether he's a legit fighter, anyone that wants to challenge anything on Brock Lesnar, I mean, they need to bite their tongues, because the man's only going to get better from here. Matt, where were you at on our main event?
First off, Mario Yamasaki, for my money, is the best referee in MMA. He always gives the fighters a fair chance. He doesn't pull the quick trigger. But, you know, great performance by Brock Lesnar. Randy Couture came prepared. He really thought he was going to win that fight, too. You could tell by how frustrated he was afterwards. He was visibly upset, and you don't often see that from Randy Couture. Generally, at this age, you know, when he loses a fight, he kind of figures, well, you know, I'm supposed to lose these anyway, and it's just exciting when I win them. But he really thought he was going to come in there and beat Brock Lesnar, and it was a great fight. The crowd really, really added to everything, chanting Randy's name pretty much throughout the fight. You know, a crowd can really make or break a fight, and they really added to it last night. And, you know, it just kind of seemed like it was a matter of time. Brock, he doesn't have great stand-up, but he just flicks out his punches, and if they catch you, it's going to put you down eventually. And, you know, Randy's time came, and he hit him kind of behind the ear with one. Didn't look that clean at first sight, but when they showed the replay, definitely, you know, it's like a club to the back of the head. And, you know, then dribbled his head like a basketball, as they said a few times on SportsCenter this morning, which was nice to actually hear some mainstream coverage. But, you know, Brock Lesnar is the champ now, and I'm really looking forward to his fight with Nogueira. Again, we won't even, you know, imply that Frank Mir has a chance in that fight. I think that's become taboo on this site now, so. But great performance, and I love the face turn that Brock pulled after the fight. You know, kisses Sable's stomach and very respectful to Randy in the crowd and everything, and I think now that he's the champ, he's going to realize, hey, I'm the star of the show now. This is my show, and he knows how to take the ball and run. And just congratulations to Brock Lesnar, and nice changing of the guard moment we saw last night.
Well, and, you know, I really didn't like the continued crowd booing of him when he was being as respectful as he was. I mean, it needs to be accepted that he's an MMA fighter. This is what he was meant to do. I mean, 2 more years in this sport, and he'll have spent as much time in this sport as he did in pro wrestling. So, I mean, it's not like he spent a lot of time of his life in WWE and in that world. And plain and simple, Brock's a good guy. He's just a cocky son of a bitch. I mean, he's confident as all hell in his abilities, and it comes off as him being a prick at times. And you know what? He's the guy that talks shit because he knows he can back it up, not the guy that does it just to do it. And, you know, Brock Lesnar is a fighter. and it's scary to think that he's only going to get better. Sean, what were your thoughts on our main event?
I was very impressed by both fighters here. Randy Couture never backed down for a second, actually even cut Lesnar. Lesnar took everything that Couture threw at him, took a couple of good shots, finally had his chin tested and passed that test. And I think this was, I mean, there was no downside here for Lesnar because he was able to get in there and get into a real fight with a guy that was going to give him everything he could handle. And he was able to weather it. I think my only disappointment is that it didn't go longer because I wanted to see how his stamina would hold up. He seemed to be getting a little bit tired towards the end of the fight. But again, if he's able to end every fight in the second round, then it's not going to matter anyway. But somewhere along the line, maybe even against Nogueira, Nogueira is a really tough guy to finish. It's never happened. How's he going to look in the fifth round against Nogueira? But seeing him do what he did to Couture again was extremely impressive. And Couture came in there with a good game plan to wear Lesnar out. But the reach that Lesnar has told the story in this one, and just the overall presence of Lesnar being able to withstand Couture in the clinch and being able to hang with him on the ground. Because if Couture gets in that position that he was in, in the top position against most other fighters, the fight's over. Randy Couture is lethal from the top position, and he's lethal in the clinch. And Lesnar took both of those positions and got out of them. And I'll tell you what, not to compare Brock Lesnar to Anderson Silva, but when you get caught with a shot and go down, if he pounces on you with hammer fists, how do you get out from under that? I mean, it was the same thing with Frank Mir. If Steve Mazzagatti doesn't stop that, doesn't call him for shots to the back of the head, Brock Lesnar wins that fight too by the same method. So that's really a dangerous position for someone to be in when he's sitting there with those giant fists raining down shots. So it's going to remain to be seen if he gets past Nogueira. Brock Lesnar may be on top for a long, long time. I think his biggest test, if he does get past Nogueira, may be a Shane Carwin, who's got really good wrestling and really explosive striking. So just nothing but exciting fights ahead for Lesnar, and exciting things ahead for Lesnar. And he's going to draw a lot of eyes to the UFC, which is a great thing. This could be the dawning of a new era here. Time will tell. But, man, he sure did look good last night.
Well, and that's one of the small things you just touched on it that Lesnar did in this fight that shows you that he's learning from fight to fight, because he got docked a point in that Frank Mir fight for hits to the back of the head, which, Mir was definitely turning his body to make Lesnar do that, knowing that it would get him out of his predicament. And you saw Couture do the same thing. And Lesnar, instead of continuing the same motion, stopped himself and tossed a couple of punches from the front as Couture was trying to lean his body in when those hammer fists were coming down on him, and he did not let himself hit Couture in the back of the head there. So that was definitely a sign of not making the same mistakes. And, Sean, like you said, if he gets past Nogueira, you have a hard time seeing anyone that's going to really present any type of game that would really be able to beat Lesnar right now. I think the submissions are the thing that is going to be going against him. And if he's able to get past Nogueira, who is just on top more so than almost anyone in this game, then that's going to be scary for who knows how long for Lesnar on top. Jason, what were your thoughts here on our main event?
This was the ultimate big fight atmosphere, and I don't think any other fighter in the promotion will ever be able to match this. I think this is why Brock Lesnar is MMA's Mike Tyson, in that everybody is going to sit still as soon as he hits the cage. It's that simple. And at a certain point, we're going to have to – nobody's ever going to forget he was a WWE wrestler, but we kind of – don't need to focus on it anymore. This would be like if you had a chance to interview Brad Pitt and you want to bring up the time he delivered pizzas when he was 17. At a certain point, let it go and focus on what he is now and what he is going to be. Brock Lesnar is a professional MMA fighter, the current UFC heavyweight champion, and the fact that he wrestled is no more relevant now at this point than your boss who took a summer job at the country club 35 years ago. His finish to this fight was amazing. Brock Lesnar with the hammer fist is like giving an 8-year-old a case of Red Bull and letting him loose on a whack-a-mole. I mean, he just looks like he's trying to kill it. I mean, I expected him to, you know, hammer Randy down, pick him up, and start caressing him like a small bunny or something. I mean, Brock just looks like a complete animal in there, but yet he's a focused animal, which was proven by the fact that he didn't barrel ass across the octagon like everybody, you know, expected. The guy's a professional athlete. He doesn't just throw caution to the wind, and he's improved by leaps and bounds. Once Randy was unable to hurt him with any shots, and the thing is, Randy hit him with some hard shots, but Lesnar's not Tim Sylvia. You know, sorry, Randy knocked down Tim Sylvia, but Sylvia's not Brock Lesnar. And I think this became, you know, apparent to Randy. I can't hurt the guy. I can't move him. You know, my only hopes are to hang in here. I mean, when Lesnar hits, they're not the most beautiful shots, but, I mean, they're like telephone poles tapping you. And it's just going to wear you down. Randy's head after this fight just looked like a purple mess. It was just horrific. It looked like he'd been rubbed with grape juice all over. I mean, his face was lumped up. Apparently, one of his teeth was knocked loose as well. Lesnar is the real deal. Where he goes from here, top buy rates every time this guy fights. Dana White and everybody's in love with Anderson Silva, but Anderson Silva is never going to capture the masses in the way that Brock Lesnar will. And it's because Brock Lesnar is a heavyweight. We like heavyweights. Brock Lesnar is American. He's an American heavyweight. This is a meal ticket, and Brock Lesnar is going to be the top draw and the top heavyweight for quite some time to come. Will he ever fight Mir again? Who knows, but he's not going to fight Mir for the belt because Nogueira is going to annihilate Mir. I think we can all make that unanimous now. Lesnar against Nogueira, that's a fight where just a short while ago you would assume Nogueira is going to completely destroy him, but Lesnar's going to get better, and he's not going to get weaker. Brock Lesnar is not going to become a weaker fighter. He's going to become smarter, and he's going to go in with a game plan. And as soon as Nogueira gets hit a couple of times, I think that's going to change the face of that fight. Lesnar has just as much a chance now as Nogueira, and that's going to be a fight I want to see. And hopefully, one day we can get Brock versus Fedor. Biggest fight in the history of MMA will be that one.
You know, I agree with you on that take. If Affliction folds in the next year and a half, and Fedor is still willing to come in and maybe at that time willing to do a deal with UFC for a multi-fight deal, Brock Lesnar against Fedor down the line definitely will be, I mean, miles ahead of what Fedor Couture would have been. I just, the simple fact that Lesnar continues to improve on every fight, and like you said, he's going to be the meal ticket for the UFC. He's going to do top buy rates every time he's in a fight for all the reasons you presented on that. And I think you just have to look at Nogueira's fight with Tim Sylvia to win that interim belt. And the fact that he was taking a ton of punishment from Sylvia and locked in a submission in the third round, whatever that was in that fight, Brock Lesnar hits a hell of a lot harder than Tim Sylvia.
Yeah.
And he's going to do a lot more damage than Tim Sylvia. And if Nogueira doesn't do something early, he's going to get hurt early and he's going to be in trouble. So, I mean, that's a whole other level of speculation that we'll have when we get up to that fight. But, I mean, again, the consensus is Frank Mir is not going to do anything against Nogueira in next month. And I don't think after watching this season of The Ultimate Fighter, anybody wants to see anything than Nogueira beating the hell out of Frank Mir, because Mir has not endeared himself to anyone in the public with his actions and attitude on this season as a coach. But guys, I'll just get your final thoughts on the show. Give your overall score for this show and how it's matched up to UFC pay-per-views that we've had this year. We've had a couple of big ones. And just quick thoughts on what you're looking forward to most from UFC 92 next month. Jason, we'll go with you.
This fight gets a perfect 10, or the whole card gets a perfect 10 out of 10 for me. This was the ultimate big fight atmosphere, and none of the fighters failed to meet expectations. They all fought their hearts out for, you know, the biggest crowd in history perceived. This was just an amazing, special, special night. No one let me down whatsoever. As far as next month's card, I'm really looking forward to Rampage versus Vanderlei, because I don't think Rampage belongs in there yet. I really don't think I've got no love for that whatsoever. I'm curious to find out where his head is. I want to know where he's at, because if he wasn't rational after the Griffin loss, how in the hell is he going to be able to get in with a new team, formulate a game plan, and be in shape and be cognizant to take on this fight? I think it's a joke, and I do feel if any other fighter would have done some of the things Rampage did, this wouldn't be happening. It is a great fight. Rampage is an excellent fighter. That's one I really want to see. Forrest versus Rashad. You know, overall, going into it, it's a bigger pay-per-view in terms of more bang for your buck, but I don't think it's going to be any bigger than this one, because it can't. This one was the biggest of the big, the ultimate big fight atmosphere, and it's going to be a while to let it surpass. The only thing that's going to surpass what we just witnessed is going to be the next Brock Lesnar fight, and I think that's going to be a continuing theme in the future. He is the meal ticket and the main player. He is the magazine cover guy. He is the face of the UFC, and he will become the face of the UFC for both casual fans, and I do believe he will endear himself to the hardcores. We're looking at a great turn for the UFC heavyweight division. We're actually excited about some upcoming fights, the possibilities surrounding them, and then next month's card is just off the chart. Great time to be a fan right now.
Sean, your final thoughts?
It really doesn't get much better in terms of delivering than this card. You know, you get all nine fights on the card televised, which is, I think, has only happened once that I remember before. But only one fight goes the distance. All the fights are good. There's not a dud to be found anywhere. It's a nice showcase in there for Gabriel Gonzaga. You know, everybody acquitted themselves well. I don't know. I think the only way you top that is with a five-round war classic title fight. But, man, this, you know, the heavyweight title fight lived up to the hype as much as it possibly could. You know, just a great, great, great card. I don't know. I mean, the next card is ridiculously loaded, but I don't know if it can still live up to this one. You know, time will tell. But I'm definitely looking forward to it. I think the whole main card is at least intriguing, if not downright exciting. You know, of course, you've got Griffin Evans, which is an exciting fight. You've got Jackson Silva, which, for all the reasons Jason mentioned, is an exciting fight. Not to mention the subplot of which will be pushed as the main plot of Jackson being 0-2 against Silva. And you've got, you know, Mustafa Al-Turk taking on Chuck Kongo. Are you going to have a new heavyweight star, or is Kongo going to continue his rise back to, you know, where he feels he should be in the heavyweight division? Mike Mastenzio, who's an unsung middleweight, is going to be fighting against C.B. Dalloway. And even on the untelevised card, on the prelims, you've got Lister Okami, you've got Anthony Hardonk, you've got Rio Chonan taking on Brad Blackburn. I mean, that's a big card from top to bottom. So UFC 92 is going to be great stuff, and we've even got two cards in between then with the next fight night and the tough finale. So, you know, nothing but good stuff ahead in December for the UFC, not to mention another WEC card coming up as well. So huge, huge end of the year coming up for the UFC and for MMA in general. This card by itself, just fantastic.
Well, guys, I want to thank you again for joining me on audio. Unfortunately, we lost Matt there at the end. But, again, great card, great stuff to look forward to next month. Agreed with both of you that we've just got a stacked card. Jason, I'm with you on not thinking Rampage should be anywhere near an octagon yet, but it is what it is, and we'll see where his head's at, like you said. I'm really hoping to see Forrest Griffin defeat Rashad Evans and kind of legitimize his title that he has, as many thought that Rampage won that fight. I was not one of them, but I am excited to see his next step as well. But just a lot of good things to look forward to. And, you know, we'll be continuing to cover it here on The Torch. We are going mobile, guys. We have a new mobile-only interface that will be streamlined for access to our articles and all of that stuff. So that's exciting stuff for The Torch this week. And we're going to be implementing our Torch rankings once again, starting with heavyweight division tomorrow. We'll be doing a new division every week until we've got them all covered, and then we will be continuing to update them after all of the major shows. So a lot of stuff to look forward to, both in MMA and on The Torch. Guys, I want to thank you once again, and we will talk to you soon. Have a pleasure.